You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Eddie, I'm glad we're getting a chance to talk to you here. You've got on February 4th, that's this Saturday, Undisputed World Super Featherweight Championship, Madison Square Gardens, Hulu Theater, New York City, live worldwide, exclusively on DAZN. You know the fighting game. You know how to talk about the fighting game, so I don't want to talk about your fight. I want to talk to you about what's going on with fighter pay in the UFC and how you see that as someone who's a promoter and you know the cutthroat business, how the fighting business, how awful it can be to the fighters. You make what of what's happening in the UFC?
I think the UFC is a fantastic business. I think also it provides incredible opportunity for fighters. Every young aspiring MMA fighter wants to be a part of the UFC, and that's because of the credibility that the brand has built. There are a lot of benefits through being with the UFC and signing that contract. I think what we're seeing now is the bigger issue of when a fighter becomes not bigger than the brand, but certainly to a point where they're driving significant pay-per-view, they're selling out arenas, and then they want to start to take control of their own career in terms of the revenue that they generate. And the boxing model for a long time has allowed fighters of that size, of that magnitude, to own the revenue around their fights. You know, if you look at Anthony Joshua, if you look at Canelo Alvarez and a lot of our top fighters, ultimately, they own the show. We work for them. We're really providing a service to the fighter who owns the revenue from the show. And I think you look at people like perhaps Francis Ngannou and probably Conor McGregor in the past, fighters that maybe become bigger than the UFC contract. And I think the pressure that is on them now as a business is probably going to change that contract. But for me, it really becomes when a fighter becomes a superstar through the UFC. I think they almost outgrow that initial contract.
Well, the business model, because it's not unionized, the fighters get a very low percentage of the cut, a very low percentage of the value of the company. So what's Ngannou worth when he leaves? When you're Dana White and you go 2 years, you run off your heavyweight champion because you don't want to pay him, and then you say he doesn't want to fight when that's the guy everybody wants to watch fight. What's he worth?
I think really then you have to make a decision as a business. You know, in boxing, there are a huge number of fighters that are overpaid in terms of their commercial value. Now, we talk about the dangers of the sport. It's very difficult to say a fighter is ever overpaid, but the reality is that many are in relation to the revenue driven around their fight. As a business in the UFC, when you have a decision to make like Francis Ngannou, you almost have to break down the barriers of what you're doing, which is that central contract. It's a dangerous move because you start opening the door to restructuring it for stars. And I think over time, it's probably something they're going to have to do. If you're Francis Ngannou, who has very cleverly kind of, found his way to become a free agent, He's now in a fantastic position. You know, he sits there as a, with an opportunity to move into the boxing world, really controlling his own destiny, doing his own deals, not having to tie himself necessarily to a promotional company, to a broadcaster. He can sit independently, almost field offers from different promoters around different fights, and he's going to make a lot of money.
Okay, but what's he worth? You know these things. You know these
The answer, what's he worth, is what's someone prepared to pay? You know, that's the better question. And I think that when you look around the likes of an Anthony Joshua fight, which is something that we could obviously look at with him, a Tyson Fury fight. I mean, these are the, they're the two big fights for him in boxing. And they're going to generate him considerably more money than he could have made, probably subject to, you know, what I've heard, probably the same as you, the numbers that were offered him through his UFC contract. So honestly, the number, I don't know, depends what the site fee is, depends what the pay-per-view revenue is, but certainly he will be in a position now to see that in black and white and make sure that the revenue received for the show goes to Francis Ngannou.
The number that's been reported is three fights, one Stipe, two John Jones, $8 million. That's underpaid for what those fights would be. He wanted his freedom. He refused to fight those fights. What's that worth?
What's what worth? Those fights?
Those three fights, Ngannou, what are those worth if you had to pay fair market value for those fights?
Well, I mean, Dan, it all depends on the revenue through the pay-per-view of a UFC deal. I don't know. I'm telling you, if you're going to sell out an arena for that fight, you're going to be selling out at around probably a $5 to $8 million gate. You know, you're going to be generating, I don't know, 300,000-400,000 pay-per-view buys at $69 a pop, you know, split with a broadcaster. There's the international sponsorship. UFC's not my game. You know, I know the boxing game like the back of my hand. I could tell you what a fight generates. And I know that a fight with Anthony Joshua against Francis Ngannou would generate well in excess of 1.5 million pay-per-view buys in the UK, would probably generate 500,000 plus pay-per-view buys in the US. Would it come with a huge site fee? Probably from the Middle East as well. And I will sit down with Anthony Joshua after his fight on April 1st and see if he wants to fight Francis Ngannou, because Anthony's mindset is to become world heavyweight champion again. So it's a big sort of diversion in the road, but also it's a fight he believes he would win, obviously, and also would generate a significant amount of money. So it's not something that I've sat down with Anthony and looked at. But, you know, in terms of what fights generate, it's not difficult to work that out, in all honesty. But what your point earlier, Dan, was fact. The margins are different. You know, when you're talking about revenue versus fighter pay, perhaps in the UFC, that model is closer to 70-30 or 80-20. It's skewed to UFC. Boxing's actually the reverse, right? So the fighters would normally generate and take home the 80% of the revenue pot, where the promoters would get 20%. You know, so obviously in many ways, I'm envious of the UFC model.
Yeah, it's a great business model if you can abuse the young guys because they're not worth very much, pay them very little, and build stars that you don't then fight because they're too big for your brand and they want too many freedoms. But Ngannou, Tyson Fury, Ngannou, Anthony Joshua, those things will probably happen and be giant fights, right? I saw that Tyson Fury wants to fight Ngannou probably because he wants to take him from Anthony Joshua.
Yeah. Well, like I say, there's only two fights for Ngannou that generate that kind of money. And that's Tyson Fury and that's Anthony Joshua. Maybe Deontay Wilder, but not of the same level as the first two. So, you know, it looks like Tyson Fury will fight Usyk maybe in April or May. AJ will fight April the 1st. And, you know, like I said, for AJ, he's not looking at a Francis Ngannou fight. He's looking at trying to become world heavyweight champion again. But it's not to say that we wouldn't be interested in discussing that fight because, like I said, it's going to generate a lot of money.
If I say to you, fighters in the game worth the most right now, mixed martial arts and boxing, how many names are you saying before you say Jake Paul?
Boxing, I'm saying Canelo Alvarez, Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury. Gervonta Davis. I think that sometimes the money and the numbers reported on fighter pay is not quite correct, and it's certainly overinflated. But Jake Paul's doing great things for boxing. You know, he's driving numbers. And I remove him now from the world of YouTube. I honestly do. You know, you've got YouTube boxing, which is really an entertainment format. And then you've got Jake Paul. And Jake Paul isn't, for me, really YouTube boxing. You know, I feel like he's doing training camps. Now he's fighting a real fighter, not a very good one, but still an undefeated professional fighter. So I feel like you have to give him his respect. He's driving numbers, he's driving interest, and I think he's doing a good job.
Eddie, on top of your boxing promotions, you are the chairman of the Professional Darts Corporation. What's a more entertaining event to attend, a prize fight or a classic darts match?
Well, I've got to say, the darts business is incredible. You know, we're seeing in the UK and around the world, darts is outperforming the rating numbers from boxing by 2 and sometimes 3 to 1. You know, we joked with Ariel Helwani recently, he became a lover of darts during the World Championship. We actually have a US darts event at Madison Square Garden in June. We did it last June. This will blow your mind. Go onto YouTube, search nine dart finishes through the PDC, which is a Professional Darts Corporation, which is our business. This will blow your mind. The atmosphere is incredible. They are working class heroes that are making millions of dollars to play darts every week around the world as part of a global schedule. It is unbelievable. But for me,
look how happy he is. You're happier there. I've asked you 9 minutes of
business
and finance questions.
You know why, Dan? Because people say thank you, right? And it's like you go into a sporting world where everyone's smiling, right? Everyone can't believe it. You know, this guy used to work on a building site. 2 years later, he's throwing darts around the world, making $5 million, right? And then you go into boxing and you're dealing with, you know, lawyers, managers, like crooks, like whatever, I don't know. Like, and it's like, it's boxing is the most beautiful sport, but the worst business.
Wait a minute, you're one of the managers.
No, I'm not. I'm a promoter. We've got a business that spans 40 years. We like to work on a word called integrity, which is a word that is virtually invisible in the fight game.
Okay, you know? Explain. I don't know. You have so many good stories, but can you explain to Amin Alhassan, a front office guy, that your best... God almighty, this is a dirty business story. God almighty, boxing is the sewer for business. I hate that I make my living in this cesspool filled with rats, leeches, and con men.
You know, I think the best way to describe it is there is no barriers to enter in terms of the boxing business, right? So this afternoon, you two sitting there in your studio could go, do you know what? Let's become boxing managers, right? Next thing, you're in my office and you're telling me that this fighter is worth $20 million a fight. Uh-huh. I've seen his pay-per-view numbers. I've seen the numbers that he generates at the gate. But you two are sitting there with no knowledge of the numbers telling me. And next thing, we're rolling around on the floor. You know, I've whacked Dan. You've jumped me from behind. You know, it's a real mess. That won't happen. But you understand what I'm saying. Fighters get advised. Literally by people who they've bumped into in Chick-fil-A, right? Like, and you get to people like even at the level of like Spence v. Crawford, right? I'm worth this. Why? You've never done a pay-per-view that's generated more than X. No, but this fight, I'm telling you now, this fight will do 1 million buys. Really? Okay. Well, I tell you what, you can own the pay-per-view. Oh, no, I don't own the pay-per-view. I want a guarantee. No, but you just told me it'll do 1 million buys. Oh, well, yeah. Oh, you know. So like, this is the problem. I mean, on one hand, the structure of the UFC contract, I know there's a lot of debate in that world about what's right and what's fair and what's not, but at least the structure has a structure. You know, in boxing, you're renegotiating every fight. It's minimum purses. It's opponents to be mutually agreed. I sit there. I'm so envious of Dana White. Sometimes he sits there and goes, morning, you are fighting you, and I'll see you at the weekend. Bye.
Yes.
That's it.
It is an unfair structure, but you're happy that at least it has a structure.
I'm happy. I'd be happy to be able to say that. And it's one of the problems with boxing. And one of the beauties of UFC is you do see the best fight the best because you're told who you're fighting.
That's
you
correct.
Sign up to an agreement. You know, you don't forget as well, Dan, you sign up to an agreement that enables you to be under that instruction to fight who you want. I would love to sit there in boxing and say, imagine how great the sport would be if you did sign, you know, a universal contract that basically enabled the money is set and you have to fight whoever's put in front of you. Right. So you get to a stage where Terence Crawford says, right, you're fighting Errol Spence. Okay, done. Gervonta Davis, you're fighting Ryan Garcia. Great. Tyson Fury, you're fighting Deontay Wilder. Wow. We'd have that every week. But unfortunately, we gave up And probably, and no, definitely rightfully so. We gave up that ability a long time ago. And now I have no problem in saying, which a lot of old school promoters do have a problem saying, every fighter that I represent is my boss, right? I work for the fighter. And notoriously, that's never how it's been. The fighter works for the promoter. That went years ago. And we started giving the fighters ownership of the revenue, which is fair. Because they're the ones, they're the entertainers. You know, if you're a singer, if you're a rock band and you're going out and you're filling stadiums, right? They're all there to watch you. You can't have the music manager taking 80% of the pot of the revenue. They are the stars, and especially in a sport which is very dangerous. They need to make sure that they, you know, and as a business, we're fine with that split in revenue. We do very well, thank you. You know, we don't need 80% of the revenue. And that's how you get longevity and relationships with clients. People like Anthony Joshua, people like Canelo Alvarez, they know when they work with us, they see everything, and they love that model.
I just can't believe that you've been in the boxing game this long. And when you talk about the business of boxing, you're interested and curious, and you kind of love it and kind of hate it. But when he asks you about darts, you're saying that's the most pure of joys, that in sport, it's not two men barbarically beating each up in a ring. It's darts is where you will find me smiling and pure.
But Dan, isn't sport, right? Sport is supposed to put a smile on your face. When you start playing any sport, that feeling that it gives you, it has to be about the glory. And the problem with professional sport is as you get deeper, it becomes more about the politics and more about the money, which is fine. That's business. But what I'm saying is darts, although these guys are making a lot of money, it's still the purity of victory. You know, it's still the moment of legacy. And that's, as a sports fan, that's what we live for every day. And it just becomes frustrating where money and politics stand in the way of legacy and achievement. And that's why darts puts a smile on my face, because these guys are out there achieving, wanting to win championships, and they're very happy with what they're being paid, which is fantastic for them. And boxing, unfortunately, sometimes the glory in boxing, there's nothing like it. You know, I went to the other night, the New York Knicks against the Lakers, right? Went out there. I thought back to Amanda Serrano against Katie Taylor at Madison Square Garden. The atmosphere for that fight was 100 times better than the Knicks versus the Lakers, right? That's why boxing can be the greatest spectacle in the world. But my God, it frustrates the life out of me.
It's the Knicks, Amin says.
If you love the darts, stand up. If you love the darts, stand up.
Yes.
If you love the darts, stand up. If you love the darts, stand up.
He's doing so, I don't understand.
Guys, you are coming to Madison Square Garden.
Hell yeah, I'm there.
Watch the darts. All on me. Yeah. You will have the best night of your life.
Eddie, I've been twice to the World Darts Championship at the Alley Pally. I can wholeheartedly 100% endorse everything you said about the darts. I'm glad the Michael Van Gerwen, Michael Smith, nine dart dueling legs went viral, because this is a sport that America can get behind. It is me drinking straight from a pitcher for three straight hours.
Okay,
it is
no
the
one
most
wants
fun
you,
that I've
no
ever
one wants
been to,
to
a
hear you
event.
Bragging about your dart bona fides. The man, are you not seeing how many people are in this room that you're saying all on me, yeah. Madison Square Garden?
No, it's just the two Chris's.
No,
just
no,
two,
no,
yeah.
I'm going.
No, it's just the two.
I'm a dartsman.
All expenses paid.
I just saw Billy come in on his day off. He just ran into the studio. Eddie, thank you for being on with us, sir.
No worries, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Eddie.
I need to publicly apologize to Eddie Hearn and all the people who were associated with bringing Eddie Hearn to us, because I was supposed to talk to him about the fight that he has on Saturday, Super Featherweight Championship, the tiny, tiny guys.
You mentioned it once.
I didn't do a very good job of promoting it, but I'll tell you why. It's because the super featherweights are too small.
You don't like, I really like the super featherweight division. I enjoy it. Like the 112-pound guys beating the hell out of each other. Like, it's way more punches, it's way quicker. I enjoy that division.
It is way more punches and way quicker because they don't have the kind of punching power you need to have where the heavyweights hit you one time and it ends the fight.
Well, I mean, relative to the size of each other, maybe the one punch will do.
But I'm just explaining why it is that I didn't promote Eddie Hearn's fight the way that I should have.
Well, I'm wholeheartedly enthusiastic saying the undisputed World Super Featherweight Championship in Madison Square Garden's Hulu Theater in New York City is live worldwide exclusively on DAZN this Saturday, February 4th.
I think you summoned fake charisma there. Fake broadcast charisma.
I actually still have a DAZN subscription because I watched the darts. And you can only watch the darts on DAZN.
You guys are going to take him up on that, correct?
Absolutely. 100%. I'm telling you, Dan, that is... I heard you in the hallway. I don't know if I'm going to go. You should go. It's enormous fun. Just drinking beers. Watching guys play darts.
I just don't think...
180.
I don't think
it's
Eddie
wonderful.
Hearn understands what he signed up for. We've got 40 employees now. He just invited the people who love to take free stuff more than anybody on his dime to New York City.
Flight to New York costs like $200 from Miami. Come on.
I'm going to bring a plus three, too. Is that okay? Or no?
See,
I have a plus one also.
See, this is what happens.
I only stay
Claire
at
can come.
I only stay at Marriott property, so you think you could
Good
sell
Lord.
That one?
This is, of course, the entitlement that we have around
JWs,
here.
Though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or the W. I'll take the regular W.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the lead in sports drink, plus eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Don Levitard.
Pablo leads all of podcasting in reading while smiling. If you listen to ESPN Daily, he sounds like he's having the time of his life.
Stugatz.
Coming up next, I'm going to tell you how the Savannah Bananas are changing
How
faces.
Do you know I'm
Savannah Bananas?
How do you know I'm smiling?
That's how I find my vocal range. Sometimes I just say, Savannah Bananas. Savannah Bananas.
Yeah.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Amin has top five things he doesn't want to be doing if the zombie apocalypse arrives. Things that he doesn't want at that moment to be participating in. We'll get to that in a second. But I just wanted to clarify something from yesterday because I hit it in passing as we were talking about Tom Brady and Tom Brady's retirement. And it got aggregated because I was amazed that Craig Carton has a television show again. After going to prison for fraud and amazed, and I used the word enraged, and I didn't specify that it's not at him. It's just how awful this industry is that somebody with that on their resume could get another job and good jobs like that when I suspect that anybody who didn't look like him wouldn't have that second opportunity afforded to them. So it was more about the industry than it was about him, because I tend to be pretty understanding with addiction, with weakness, even if it leads you to desperation and fraud. But the idea that that resume would make its way back up in the industry, that's something that can only happen for a white man.
Hold on a second. I don't even remember you saying that. That got aggregated?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
He mentioned it in passing, and then it got aggregated as Dan Levitard enraged.
Hitting low-hanging fruit. And
wow.
And it's not even, like, what do you mean low-hanging fruit? He was in prison for fraud. Like, you don't have to.
I didn't know that, by the way. Now I'm learning. I'm reading the awful.
No, this was a big story.
Well, not only that, though. See, this is the thing. Not only that, his comeback included an HBO documentary that he clearly had creative control over, because they didn't actually do the stuff that was hard about how dirty the crime and the addiction to gambling were.
Now you're enraged, though.
Yeah, now I can feel the rage.
Written the story to now
they were ahead of time.
Yeah. But is it directed at him or the industry? Let's rummage around in because I don't do outrage very much.
You're outraged right now.
the idea
there's also enraged.
Like, there's also like the very specific New York radio criticize everyone kind of style that Greg Carton brings to his particular stylings, which is somewhat of contrast to the work that we do here on this program.
Truly, this is the first time I'm learning this man exists.
Really?
Yes.
That should get aggregated by all there you go. Jessica's I don't know this man exists.
I think we can do.
Is he on Twitter? TikTok?
Very large
doing dances.
Segments where we teach Amin about baseball, very rudimentary things, and we teach Tony and Jessica and Chris Whittingham about celebrities that they should know or stories that they should know.
Yes.
But Craig Carton would not be one of them because Craig Carton isn't like some ancient person. But the idea that he's rejuvenated his career and a lot of people don't even know what it is that you're talking about, when that's a prime media role. He's gotten a couple of really prime media real estate roles after emerging from prison.
Has he talked about it at all?
Well, on the documentary, he talked about it. And I don't know whether he does so on his shows or not, but I found that documentary to not be very transparent.
If I were him, I would have all my segments in the show have like prison references, right? Call it's time to hit the commissary, boys.
See, Dan, I told you the commissary connotes prison, and you want us to be out in a commissary just commiserating with each other.
Commissary is always prison. I don't associate it with prison.
You gotta put stuff on my books.
Is commissary only prison?
Ask Craig Carton.
No, movie studios have commissaries.
Nah.
They have cafeterias.
They have commissary.
No,
it's Warner Brothers has or had a commissary.
Not anymore. Not after the prison.
Is there a number at which you arrive at a commissary if you're feeding the commissary is larger than the others because you're feeding hundreds and hundreds of people? Is that why it's a commissary?
I don't know.
It's the setting, right? Because in the military, it's a mess hall, right?
I will say, I just pulled out the definition of commissary, and it says a restaurant and a movie studio, military base, prison or other institution. So it's institutions. So
is this an institution?
We are kind of a movie studio. Mike Schur works here. Adam McKay.
We've made a movie.
Well, that's okay. And we're a studio.
Thus
there you go.
Makes it a movie studio.
More of a documentary, really.
Well, aren't they the
documentary
same?
Documentary is a subgenre of movie. Yeah. So.
Mm. We didn't really do it here, though.
Our own accomplishment.
No, it's that we didn't really do it here, right? We did it somewhere else.
It's still our company.
Yeah, but it's not here, though.
We're the studio.
What does that mean?
And it's a movie. We made
it. Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. Good Neighbors, streaming now.
Good Rivals, excuse me.
That was the old title of the movie.
It was supposed to be.
Yeah, that was the old title of the movie.
It was supposed to be Good Neighbors. It should have been Good Neighbors.
Before State Farm dropped that as a title sponsor. I can't wait for my documentary to get made so I can walk around and say, I'm a movie producer. And then I'm going to wear a scarf everywhere and drive one of those like old convertibles.
Your character's name could be Hollywood Beckons. You could just create some stupid character.
I want those tuxedos with the white scarf. You know what I'm talking about?
Did you just make up that name?
Hollywood Beckons.
Yeah, like Beckons. B-E-C-K-I-N-S, and you wear a scarf, and you're like, you've gone to Hollywood on us, but you're actually just the dirty, drunk basketball troll.
No.
Whoa. That should be the name of a character that Jamie Foxx plays in a movie.
Hollywood Beckons. I want those little goggles they wear when they drive in their convertible.
You got to have gloves, right, to work to drive?
Driving gloves. Oh, can't wait to show up to work like that the next
day. It's a good character. Yeah.
Hollywood Beckons.
What's the movie project that's going to get you there, Amin?
I could put you in the pictures.
Oh, you're going to go old school?
I got to.
You're going to go 20.
My name's Hollywood Beckons. That's not a modern person.
I love every time Martin Scorsese calls a movie a picture. It just delights me.
What is number five on your list of top five places or things?
Things I hope. I hope the zombie apocalypse doesn't happen while I'm things.
Sort of match gamey.
Right.
On the toilet type situation.
Do you have the match game sound? Were we able to take that away from ESPN, even though it's not our sound? It's the match game sound?
I'm on it.
All right. So top things I hope the zombie apocalypse doesn't happen while I'm doing, right? OLI, dodging a bill collector. By the way, I should mention, before I get into this, this is assuming that I intend to survive the zombie apocalypse. I have famously said many a times, when the zombie apocalypse happens, just bite me.
Yeah, you just want to be, you want to go on the first day.
I don't want to live through whatever comes next. But if I had to, right? then these are the things I hope to God isn't happening when the zombie apocalypse
happens. You have famously said you don't want to live through the apocalypse. Famously. Just if so, so just get me right, make me first.
Yes,
I'm fine.
Just
being
get,
the,
me
the,
okay. Get me out of the way.
I feel similarly when I watch zombie apocalypse or any sort of like post-apocalyptic movie. I'm like, just let Sucks. Me. I don't want to be bartering Sucks. Penicillin on like year 30 of the apocalypse. I've seen all my friends and family die. I'm left. I'm a survivor now. Like, as
I can't
is it really
trust
a life
anybody.
Yeah.
Is this person gonna try and eat me? Like, you know,
oh, you know, you're gonna die at some point too. You're not gonna be the hero.
No, and it's gonna be a gruesome death. So like, so but assuming that I have to in this hypothetical. Then OLI dodging a bill collector.
But what does this mean? The dodging, nobody answers their phone anymore. It's like pretty easy these days to dodge a bill collector.
I'm just saying, I don't want to be like kind of like stressed about a bill.
There can't be in-person bill collectors anymore. No,
like
they?
A process server.
I don't even
server.
Know. Like, yeah. Is like Seth Rogen's character and knocked up?
Not knocked up.
Whatever was, film it is.
But what do you mean, bill collector? Like, what is this? Okay,
Pineapple
let's move
Man.
On to number four.
No, no,
I don't
no,
know.
No, no.
I'm with this is OLI,
so,
though.
So this so. Is this is what's happening. I get that 800 number that I know is a bill collector. I'm stressed. I owe them $17,000. I can't make a payment right now. Like, I don't want that to be happening, and then zombies attack. Like, oh, come on, man.
Won't you be relieved when you die, though? Like, oh, shit, I don't have to pay off all my debt.
But I can't die in this scenario. I have to survive. So
oh, okay.
In this
okay,
scenario.
Okay.
And you in don't... These you, top, you, but you also, what you're saying is that you do not want to just have that feeling on you of I owe somebody something.
No, not that I owe somebody something. It's that I am in the middle of stressing about owing money. And then that's when the zombie apocalypse has just started. Like, oh, eh. Like, I want to kind of be free conscious going into this. I don't want to be having worried about something else. And now I got to transfer my worry over. That's just
the
too
list
much.
Has started terribly.
Oh, but that's OLI, though. So you got to. Number five.
Oh, nice. Okay, now we're doing it.
Misty says, I'm terrified that the zombie apocalypse could be coming. I surely don't want to be blanking while it happens.
Yes. Hell yeah. Yes. There you go. Good job.
I don't think it's going to work, though, because Amin's not going to have a perfect phrase to put in there.
Oh, I will. Say it again.
Misty says, The zombie apocalypse could be happening soon. I surely don't want to be blanking while it happens.
You need the phallic microphone for that.
Watching a bad movie for Cinephobe.
Working, in other words.
Not working, because if it's a good movie for Cinephobe, like a Cinephobe movie that is eligible but is enjoyable, that's fine. But I was watching Speed 2 the other day, and it's just so...
Cruise Control?
Oh my God, man.
A classic.
You don't want to die listening to Robert Langdon mansplain something to
yes,
the female lead
the
in Angels
Code.
And Demons.
Like, that would be the worst. That would be the absolute worst. Sitting around, just looking at this ridiculous Dan Brown character.
Chris Cody, you are here for Speed 2?
I mean, it's just one of those, like, it's not good, but I enjoy watching it. I love cruises. Yeah. Like, I mean, I know that it's a terrifying cruise movie, but...
It's not terrifying at all.
Richard Dawson, what do you think?
Number four. Getting my ass beat.
Yeah. I mean, that would be bad.
Just, yes. you're like, someone just... getting curbs on, and then the zombie apocalypse happens.
You're looking out of the corner of your eye. You're on the floor. You're getting dragged, and you're like, "Is that a zombie over there?"
Yeah, like, and they're not going to believe me because they're kicking my ass, right? They're just going to keep doing it.
Number three,
having sex. I don't want to be naked when the zombie apocalypse happens. I don't want to be running around like let me get some clothes on first. Hold on.
I mean, it's if you're going to go.
No,
it's
but
not dodging
again,
a bill collector. It's not.
Dan, in this scenario, I have to survive. This isn't me just like, one of them days. It's not one of that. It's like, I've got to survive. So running around, like trying to get my underwear on. Because remember, it's not just, you know, escaping the zombies. I'm going to run into other people at some point. It's like, why are you naked? Well, it's a long story.
You strike me as a shirt on guy.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
And never nude.
That's not never nude.
That's
like
that,
a reverse never nude, upside down never nude.
That is
that's insecurity.
That is a,
bad.
That is a damning accusation, though, Jesse.
You can't say much worse about somebody.
I could answer that question, but it's going to be way.
Don't.
Like,
they made me say it. Let's just move on.
Yeah. Yes, uncomfortably.
Number two, Roy called it, taking the shit.
Did he call it?
Yeah, he said you don't want to be on the toilet.
Yeah.
That's $250 Roy, answer.
Roy ruined the top five list.
I apologize, Charles Nelson
by naming
Rally
the
over
obvious
here
one.
but here's why. Because again, first of all, the nakedness, right? Second of all, this list came to me while I was taking a shit. I was like, oh my God, this would be the worst time for a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Roy right
yourself
now has twice mentioned names that I'm guessing the entire room does not know. He mentioned Charles Nelson Reilly. No way that you guys
know.
Oh,
that delighted me.
Yeah,
you
man.
No clue.
Who is that? Wow. Who didn't watch Game Show Network when they were 13 years old? No, just me? Okay.
Is that the guy that would kiss all the...
That's Richard Dawson. Yeah.
That was always weird.
What do you mention him?
Who is the lady with the big glasses?
Brett.
Yeah, Brett. Is it Brett Summers?
Yeah, Brett Summers, yeah.
Oh, Roy, man, how delightful old are you?
I know
ageless
things.
He's ageless.
Charles Nelson Reilly.
Roy has always existed.
Number one.
He's like one of the Ents in Lord of the Rings.
put it on the poll, Juju, please. Has Roy always existed?
Number one.
That is his age. It's what his age.
He's actually 830 years old.
He's literally
I'm older than Patino.
You've seen every single movie that has ever come out prior to the year that Claire was born, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
your catalog on celebrity goes back in... Charles Nelson Reilly is 70s.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
but 50 they used, years ago.
I remember when we first got DirecTV, we first got HDTV, it was a wonder to flip through the channels. And I used to watch Game Show Network all the time. I discovered what Match Game was because I used to watch, what's the name of the host of the show? Gene Rayburn and his phallic microphone.
It's a great, the game show, that is the game show golden era. Are we still doing that well?
Game shows
are back, Jack.
Steve Harvey. Yeah.
Game shows
Elizabeth
are having
Banks
a moment. I saw there's an hour of lingo on ABC.
I just discovered that lingo is basically Wordle.
It's Wordle, yeah.
And so Wordle just ripped off lingo and mass produced.
I mean,
it's exactly Wordle.
Yeah, like, guess a five-letter word is not exactly an original concept, but yeah.
Wheel of Fortune is just Hangman.
Yeah.
Is it?
That's all it is.
Isn't it?
And it's kick tac toe this weekend.
Still in the game.
Hollywood Squares is tic tac toe.
But when is the last big one of these to make to land?
I'd say probably Celebrity Family Feud has really landed in a big way. Like that's a
no, but that's not
more
new
of a spin-off.
You're talking
though,
about a
right
new show.
No,
right?
I'll stop
on Family Feud every time just to watch for a minute. There's something hypnotizing about it. Jessica's offended by Celebrity Jeopardy. Celebrity Jeopardy is she can't abide that.
It's too f-ing easy. Give me a break.
They're celebrities.
So are they stupid too?
Yes, they're celebrities.
There's like this basketball player joined the Golden State Warriors after their 2016 championship run.
What is Ben?
And then they show a picture.
Who's Kevin
and I'm
Durant?
Like, it's
No, it really is. Like Celebrity Jeopardy is to make people at home feel smart.
Yeah.
And also they're raising the money for charity.
Yeah,
no, that too. Yeah.
No, but like, can we play like a reasonable facsimile of the game?
You want them to donate $7 to charity?
Do we think that all celebrities are stupid?
Apparently they are.
Yeah, it's patronizing.
This is the thing. So there's like multiple rounds. It's a tournament. The first round,
hour long.
Sure.
Too.
Yes. Sure. Make the first few rounds easy.
Sure.
Weed out the stupid people. But once we get to the championship, and I'm watching Michael Cera, Brendan Hunt, and Patton Oswalt, ask them the hard hitting questions.
No.
Every single question I got right.
You've gone too far.
That should not happen.
You just want them to be funny. Let them be their funny selves, and that's all it's been. Raise some money for charity.
At least one 18th century
guys,
literature
I haven't,
category.
Guys, I haven't finished my list, by the way. Number one.
Hold on a second.
I think to answer your question on the last game show, that hit would be Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, yeah.
That's the last one?
That's the last
one. Maybe the last one. Unless you include like Wipeout or something.
Which was originally a British game show, too.
Wasn't there one with Suitcases and Howie Mandel after that?
Oh, yeah. Deal or No Deal. Definitely came after
what about
One versus 100. I think Saget was the...
What about The Chase? Remember The Chase?
The Chase, yeah.
Weakest Link.
Remember Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Oh, that one was...
Also known as Celebrity Jeopardy.
Oh, Jesus.
Number one.
The number one thing I hope I'm not doing when the zombie apocalypse happens. Saying, there's no such thing as zombies.
You just don't want to be wrong at the end?
I just, like, run. I just imagine.
Wrong one last time.
Running for my life and, like, you stupid, stupid son of a bitch.
Just hating yourself at the end. The last thing that you're doing is self-loathing.
You asshole. I love that. It's also like the half-hearted jog that you see in the movie. It's like, God damn. Not like sprinting. Just like, no, come on, man.
You would rather be mid-shit than be proven wrong. Yeah, okay. Got it.
Don Levitard.
Well, my point about Jimbo Fisher is that Nick Saban, he's been trying to cancel me for saying that Mrs. Met has cake. And Bobby Bowden would have said, Mrs. Met... she is snatched.
Stugatz.
I never pay for a player. Now, I would pay for Mrs. Med to give me a lap dance.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
A rabid Amin just spit at the television camera for some reason. An acidic. We get it, Eric Stone Street. You're from Kansas City, and it's the time of year that you go on every show to tell us that you love barbecue in Kansas City.
Find another bit.
I feel like we had him before it was popular to have him. Now I mean, he goes everywhere.
No,
Eric Stone Street was on Modern Family at the time. He wasn't anonymous.
I'm not saying we made him. I'm saying we had him on talking about Chiefs before everyone was having him on talking about Chiefs.
No, Cody. No. Witty's right. Like, Eric Stone Street was this hard...
We created it.
No. He's Witty's right. He was homeless, and we basically said, you know what, man? But you love your Kansas City things, so come on our show and talk about it. And then someone watching our show was like, you know what he'd be good for? A TV series.
This Stone Street fella's got something about him. He's going to be in the pictures.
This is not what Hollywood Cody is alleging.
Hollywood Beckins.
Cody is alleging that you are now tired of Eric Stone Street as a Chiefs fan, but he's saying, we brought you earlier than most Eric Stone Street joining the show to be a Chiefs fan.
I disagree. He was, at the same time he was coming on here, he was going on Patrick. I don't know if you guys know this.
Well, I disagree with you.
Dan,
I love that as a debate show.
You lose.
That sounds like the parody debate show from 30 Rock.
Saying they disagree. And
I think
not,
it was like the bit was like Tracy Jordan as Stephen A. Smith. And he was just like, no, I disagree with you.
Did any of you guys enjoy
Tracy Morgan?
His character on the show is Tracy Jordan.
Oh, yeah. I need to rewatch that show.
Delightful.
Dangerously close to a fine.
You would like it.
I don't know. Network television just doesn't do it for me.
It was network television looking at television.
We have Mike Schur on every day. Yeah. His most popular shows are on network television. They're quite good.
Let's not mention that when he's around.
You are that kind of a snob. You right now will not watch any network television. You look down on all. You have arrived at total snobbery.
The last network television show that I watched, Seinfeld, probably.
What?
Yeah.
You didn't watch like Lost?
Never watched Lost. Never watched a second of Lost.
The Office?
Never watched The Office. I watched the British version of The Office, and then when I tried to watch the American Office, it just wasn't that, and I couldn't. Did Mike explain this here, where he was talking about early on they try to make Steve Carell's character like David Brent, like Ricky Gervais' character?
The pilot is like a beat-for-beat reshot of the British Office, isn't it?
And then they realize at some point, no, he has to be more sympathetic. And that's what made the show blow up, as opposed to it would have been maybe canceled very early on. I find this is funny because we were talking about Parks and Rec the other day, and that scene where they Leslie Knope is accepting the award, and I walked away thinking to myself, "Wow, man, I actually am way more interested in the conversation how you came and arrived at that bit than I am with the bit itself." I was more enthralled with that than I was watching the actual scene.
I actually, like, having watched The Good Place, which is one of my five favorite shows ever, The Good Place is incredible. I kind of admire that, and I'm not just saying this because he's a colleague of ours and we talk to him every day, but like, the constraints of working within network television and still being able to pull off a great show is kind of remarkable. That, like, The Office, Parks and Rec, and The Good Place are all damn funny shows from places of you can't curse, you can't do subject matter that's that risque. I actually kind of find it a more difficult barrier to entry to try and make a good network television show.
Absolutely.
You'd be shocked to learn that the ratings of some network shows that none of us have ever watched are up there with some sports shows. I looked up the top five network TV shows of the last year.
Chicago Blue, Chicago Red.
Chicago Fire, Blue Bloods, FBI, NCIS, and Yellowstone is the
What do they
one.
Average?
Well, Yellowstone was 11.31 million.
Yellowstone is the most popular show in America, is it not? Yes.
But does that count because it's like prestige television on a network? Like, it's not the typical network formula, right?
I've never watched it, so I don't know. It's network.
I think what this tells you is that most people are still not consuming the way Amin is, from the snobbery of I'm not watching on commercials, I'm streaming, I'm making my own menu at every turn, and I want it without, you don't need to clean it up for me. You don't need to make it network palatable for me. The grand majority of Americans are still watching the old way, not that way.
Absolutely. Everything we're talking about when we talk about cord cutting, when we talk about the shifting dynamics, all of that is, we're still talking about the future. The curve still hasn't hit the part.
I think we're nearing 50-50.
Sure.
But like the difference is, I mean, we're mostly talking about age here.
Yes.
People who are 50 or older watch CBS shows, and they still consume television in the way that they always did. But I think people younger than 50 are watching shows on streaming, but the consensus, like there's so many more options that you will not see the consensus of 9.7 million people watching a show like The Last of Us, which is the show that all the people that, you know, are into shows and like are you know, will spread things via word of mouth. They'll tell you about The Last of Us. Most, like, not everyone who streams has agreed, let's all watch this one thing. And that's the difference between television now and television then.
Fragmented. Everyone's fragmented.
Network TV's free, too, so obviously more people will watch it.
Can you get for me the sound that Roy requested? I don't want to leave today without going back to the just terrible judgment.
Terrible judgment?
Roy's judgment today has been terrible. It began with smiling throughout David Sampson telling you about his pain. Oh, you forgot about that.
Grinning maniacally. Yeah, not just grinning.
Just happy. That legitimately can't stop laughing, as happy as any of us have ever seen you. At the
He's
fact
still
that
laughing.
David
He's doing
Sampson
it again. I'm smiling again.
I don't like this character. David Sampson. Terrifying.
David Sampson can't taste or smell. It delights Roy. It is the strangest thing. And then Roy
still
says,
smiling.
Yeah, still smiling.
I can't stop.
We have created the apocalyptic scenario where all of us have arrived one day here at work and Stugatz has stolen everything. There, nothing works here anymore, but you're granted by a genie, Frankie, our security guy, the wish of going back and getting one thing.
And this is what Roy said.
I love the visual of Frankie being a genie.
But Frankie grants you the wish of you can go back and get one thing in all the history in this building that's falling apart at the Clevelander, everything that we built at Metal Arc Media. And what is the one thing Roy would go, Roy would go back in and get?
Run into the end zone, listen to Sparano's roar. Ball's underthrown, begging you to catch and go. Hard line to the end zone. Right into the end zone.
This is so painfully bad.
That's why it's so
great. Why would you want to keep this?
That's why it's so great.
Heading for a touchdown, never gonna happen.
There's more!
What's even?
Got you fumbling, what a rip.
Unintelligent.
And you for defense.
Let the man sing!
Hard line to the end zone.
Brian Hartline. Former Dolphins receiver.
He's now like the best receivers coach in the country.
Was that the 1-15 Dolphins team?
No, because there was a Sperano.
Oh, no,
finale here.
Everyone seems to be sold. You know what's coming in the end. We want Andrew Luck, so let's fold.
All right. That's
the guy responsible for Jackson Smith and Jigba. This is him.
So this is what I love. Several things. One, beyond being completely off rhythm, what I love is the idea that in my mind's eye, Metal Arc Media is a burning building, right?
It's and, Chernobyl.
And no, it's like it's a burning building, and everyone's outside on the lawn looking at this. And Roy says, "Wait!" And he runs inside. Like, Roy, what are you doing? And things are collapsing. And
I've got
collapsing.
A flash drive.
I have to go. No. And then Roy comes out, and he's got something swaddled.
Swaddled,
and
yeah.
He's got, and he's smoke coming off him, and the firefighters are putting a blanket on Roy. What are you doing? And then he reveals what he went to save, and it was that song.
Just the cut lines me in there.
Run into the end zone, listen to Sparano roar. Balls on the throne, begging you to catch and go.
How is it possible?
End zone.
Wait, just the opening line is probably the funniest thing I've ever heard. Play just the opening part again.
Run into the end zone, listen to Sparano's roar.
Listen to Sparano.
The late Tony Sparano.
Roy, I cannot
rest
believe.
Rest in power.
To the end zone. Right into the end zone.
He's so shy.